brings you your hosts.
Welcome to Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
Hello, Angela.
Well, hello, Tuesday Miles. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It seems like we haven't been on the air forever.
I know. How was Halloween?
Halloween was so boring. I couldn't believe it. You know, we had a total of about 12 trick-or-treaters, which is very odd because I do live in a residential area. And, you know, I was so sad because I love seeing their costumes, but it just seems like less and less each year, you know, that we get trick-or-treaters. And, you know, and my ghosts, they must have been out trick-or-treating because they were very calm and they just were scattered. But, you know, I experienced that every year with my ghosts. Actually don't really show up that much around on Halloween. They kind of take a leave of absence for the day, so... which is fine with that, with me on it, but it just seemed, it just wasn't the same. And, you know, and even people that would, you know, have their lights on and, you know, to give the trick-or-treaters a sign that, that somebody was there that they were going to get candy from was less and less. So I don't know. I guess we, maybe it's beginning to where we really, really don't trust doing that anymore, Angela.
Well, I believe a lot of parents don't trust that for their children, and so they now go to retail malls or Halloween parties and things of this nature.
Well, I guess it's, you know, I mean, it's safe for them, and it's, you know, so many kids each year get hurt by crossing the street, not looking where they're going or tripping over their costumes and such, and, you know, but Halloween is a huge moneymaker for retail businesses.
Mm-hmm, it certainly is.
I know that... I recall this one year where I took my son trick-or-treating, and he was kind of really afraid of Halloween. So we would do one block and see how he felt. And we got to this one house, and I noticed that there was two kind of straw men that were sitting on a bench. Mm-hmm. And they looked like they were just like, you know, scarecrows. And no sooner that I could say to them, "Don't you dare," and they reached out and, "Woo!" And it scared my son so bad, Angela, he passed out.
Oh, no.
He passed out. Yeah, well, needless to say, after I got him home, I went back.
Well, at least he could rely on you to collect the candy.
Yeah, I collected the candy. That was for sure on that one on it. So, you know, and those were the old days. I used to have a good time at Halloween. So I hope everybody out there had a very safe Halloween on it, and this brings us into the next month where we have some other holidays that are starting to come up, and we have a new president.
We do indeed.
You know,
very interesting to see what's going to be happening over the course of the next few months.
Absolutely on it, Angela. And you know, I'm going to say this because the spirit world, I really truly believe, Angela, was very aware of the election going on. I think they were very aware that there was a lot of commotion here on Earth. That there was something that was very important that we had to make a big decision on, you know, because the energy from them was just completely scattered. It was that almost like they were unable to be still.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the increase of the activity, in fact, around for the last couple of weeks. It's just been crazy.
Well, I agree with you there, Tuesday. And even, you know, the citizens of the United States had their energies all over the place as well. You know, it went from, you know, strong support of one candidate to, you know, jumping ship.
Oh, absolutely on it, you know.
So it was a very unusual election.
It was. And, you know, we had a lot of different propositions that some made it and some didn't. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not a person that's going to promote in this. This is not a political show at all. This is a paranormal show. But I have to say one thing. And I do feel this is important. Whether or not that you have a belief system, whether it's spiritual, whether it's different orientation, for different religion, for whatever it is, each person still has the right to live their life in their own beliefs and in their own ways.
I agree with you.
And it's not up to us to tell them how to live. Whether we don't agree with it, the Constitution agrees with it, the religions or the Bible doesn't agree with it, it still isn't right for us, for anybody, to make a judgment on that person. You know, people come in all shapes and sizes, and the fact is they're still good people. It doesn't matter. So, and that's all I have to say about that subject.
All right then. So no spirit activity on Halloween. Halloween was great. Did you celebrate All Souls Day, November the 1st?
Well, you know what? It came and gone so fast that I actually tell the truth, Angela. I remember because I seen it advertised. That's how I was, you know, giving me that little memo on it, and it was came and gone so fast I forgot about it again. So I really didn't do much about it, and I really don't celebrate that anyways. I do know that is a big celebration in the with the our Mexican American people out there, and
well, in the Catholic community worldwide,
right. Yeah.
It really is, and other faiths also celebrate All Souls Day. But I can tell you who in New Orleans celebrates All Souls Day with a huge party, and that is Anne Rice.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I attended one of her parties for that.
Oh,
and I have to tell you, people flew from all over the world to attend, and they dressed up in costumes, many of them did, from some of her characters in her books.
Wow. Now, mm-hmm. Is this a different holiday where they actually will dig up the body and clean the bones?
No.
Because there is a holiday that is celebrated that they actually will go and do that. They actually dig up the bodies of their loved ones, and they wash their bones.
Mm, no.
Well, I have to find out what that one is.
Not that I'm aware of. Not
if anybody else knows the name of that, let us know. So, you know, why we're on the show tonight. But the, I can't write. I know that there is a specific holiday. I watched a documentary long ago about it. But we'll have to look that up. But so with Anne Rice, then, huh? Pretty impressive there, Angela.
Yes, indeed. It was one of the most unique parties I had ever attended because not everyone wore costumes. Not everyone wore clothing.
Oh, wore clothing. Okay.
Right. It was, I thought I was a pretty liberal thinker until I attended that party.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, what would be the point of not wearing no clothes then?
Well, I think that they were mimicking one of the characters in her book. And so a leather strap that went around the chest, and that was it.
Oh, that was it.
That
okay.
was it.
Hmm.
Went along with the, you know, the nice smooth skin, I suppose.
And
but.
That's, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but the fact is that you can only keep looking to the side, you know, away from so long before you actually peek, you know. I mean, they're peeking. You peek.
Well, the costumes were very elaborate. In fact, you know, in New Orleans, they have Mardi Gras parties. And people literally spend thousands of dollars on costumes. However, these costumes at Anne Rice's party certainly were more elaborate, more expensive, and very detailed. So it was a wonderful experience that I'll mark up in my history book. And, you know, but All Souls Day. So it's a big party for Anne Rice, that and Halloween. So 2 days back-to-back for her.
Oh, wonderful on that. So in the same sense as that, you last time we spoke, that you also spoke about some activity in your home. Has that calmed down some, too?
No, not really. To tell you the truth, about 1 month ago, I was given a very lovely cat, and I have not had animals for about 13 years. But the cat now has picked up on the spirits here in the house, and sometimes she's, you know, she acts very afraid, and other times she, you know, tends to play with them, I guess, because they're spirits that I don't see, but she's very much interacting with. There's been quite a bit more of apparitions in the house, and I have to tell you, from most rooms in the house, so the activity really is changing here.
Yeah, you know, you and I did speak about that, and I actually did go into, and for those of you who have a MySpace or are involved with MySpace, go to our site on MySpace. It's you know, of course, www.myspace.com/portaltalkradio. And join as friends and stuff. And, you know, I did blog about that. I did said I was going to blog about the animals and stuff. And the fact is that what, you know, what to expect when you bring a new animal home if you've got activity in your home. Expect that the fact is that dogs and cats do have exceptional sight of spirit. Poor little thing.
Well, yeah, I really do feel for the animals. I think that if they're brought up in it, it's not anything that would bother them so much. But having a an animal that enters the home, you know, with some sort of maturity with them, it's just not, you know, used to it. So,
oh, sure. And, you know,
and of course, do we ever get used to it as individuals?
Yeah, well, in some way we do. I have, you know, in some way I've learned to continue life without stopping constantly. And you know, it's like a tourist when you're seeing something new and you're pointing at, oh, new ghost, you know. But, you know, like we were speaking that, you know, I had to walk my dog through this. I had to actually literally train her to, you know, make that choice if she didn't want something around her. And I spoke with her regarding it, you know.
Mm.
Let them know that you don't want them around you. You have, you know, that way of communicating with them. And so it really has helped me talking her through it. It's okay. She knows the tone of voice that I use when I'm speaking spirit. She's right underneath my feet when I do. And she knows immediately when I say, oh, that, you know, so-and-so ghost, and she picks her head up and looks around like, where? You know?
Well, do you ever feel, Tuesday, that people think that ghosts or spirits in their house is a negative thing? I mean, many people associate ghosts with, you know, things that go bump in the night.
Sure. I did for about a year, I did, Angela. Well, it took me actually a little bit longer than that because I didn't trust anything. I had a horrible time with it. And it took me a while to discern the difference between what was not here for my best interest and what was. What was here just passing by. You know, I mean, it takes time to learn and trust. And that's why, like I said, it comes with experience, that you finally reach a place where you can relax. You know, and thank God that I have, because otherwise, you know, I mean, people, sometimes you can't get rid of a ghost or spirit. You know, you can't get rid of it, so you coexist with it. You know, and that's part of our teaching, too, with paranormal investigation, is that sometimes the problem's going to stay there, and so you learn how to coexist with each other.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying there.
Mm-hmm. So on that note, but let's talk about first who's our guest tonight.
Well, back by popular demand, it's Dr. Vernon Nepi. Now, for those listeners that have heard of Dr. Nepi, and for those who haven't, Dr. Nepi is the world's leading authority on deja vu, but tonight he's going to be introducing a research classification model that breaks down PSI, you know, psi information, premonitions, and that sort of thing, and shows evidence through, with that information. And this method is called Seattle, as in like Seattle, Washington. In that Seattle method, he also has a Tickles method. And so joining him tonight are two research psychics that will talk specifically about the Tickles method, modifiers, and how they give the information that is needed in order for documentation. For more information about Dr. Nepi, go to brainvoyage.com or pni.org to learn more about Nepi and many of the books that he has written. In fact, he has Cry the Beloved Mind, A Voyage of Hope. And I have to tell you, Tuesday, that book is written for the masses. So anyone that may be experiencing some emotional or mental challenges or have a loved one or friend that is going through that, Cry the Beloved Mind is certainly a book that they will want to get. Also, there's more information on portaltalkradio.com about tonight's guest.
Thank you, Angela, for all that. You know, mm-hmm. and I have said this before, that I am a little bit intimidated by Dr. Nepi. Dr. Nepi has over-exceeded, I think, the massive intelligence level. I find myself that when he gets into, you know, because when he articulates his words, he's very smooth, and
mm-hmm.
he does use words, I do admit each time that I have to run and get the dictionary out. And that's okay, because I do learn, you know, from him when he's on the show on it. And, you know, we do prepare for Dr. Nepi when he is going to be on the show. We do spend much time on reading his work and over and over. Well, me, it's over and over and over again, because I have to do that. But, you know, and understanding his writing. On it. And I have to say, you know, Angela, he is absolutely remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
He is indeed. And you know, Tuesday, he is considered one of the greatest minds in the 21st century. So he is a genius, but he's very likable as well. So I don't want to in any way, shape, or form say, because he is highly intelligent, that, you know, he's not understood. He has a wonderful sense of humor. And,
yes, he does.
And a wonderful accent as well. So he's very thorough. And that's what we love about Dr. Nepi.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, it's clearly my problem when on understanding him on it. You know, it's my left side of the brain doesn't want to work with my right side for some reason on it. So, no, absolutely on it. In fact, I actually emailed him with some personal information that he was very informative on and helpful with. So I like Dr. Nepi on it. It's just that, you know, when it, you know, it's that goal that we want to reach, that level of understanding, you know, one day on it. And so we have, you know, again, that coming up, and he's going to join us actually in a few minutes. We'll bring him on the show. And we booked some extra guests on the show, you know, with these holiday months coming up. But, you know, we have Pamela Heath coming up next week, and Melinda Leslie actually will be on, too, the second half of that show.
Mm-hmm.
And Melinda Leslie was actually on with Joe Montalto on Coast to Coast. Then we have Brad Steiger. I can hardly wait to get him on because, you know, I've got some, you know, I've written for him and some of his books that's coming out, and he's publishing my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I can hardly wait till we can talk about that. And then we have, of course, Dr. Gary Schwartz.
Dr. Gary Schwartz, wow.
I know it. And,
I'm
you know,
excited.
I know. You know, we have the Chris Fleming. We've got all kinds of things coming up on it, too. And, you know, also, too, I think that there's some featured guests and stuff that we're going to be doing for some Paranormal Research Society teams out
mm-hmm.
there. So I know that there's some new findings that are coming up. And, you know, we've been trying to get Lloyd. How do you pronounce Lloyd's last name?
Arabach.
Yeah.
Arabach.
Okay, Lloyd, here it is. Put it publicly on the air. We would love to have you on as a guest. So far, we haven't been able to pinpoint you down to make a commitment on what day. So here's the invitation to you. We would love for you to join us on the portal, Paranormal Talk Radio,
wonderful.
As a guest. So,
now, how can he refuse such a wonderful invitation? Well, you know, also, one of our guests is Anna Marie Hemingway. Now, she wrote a book called Practicing Conscious Living and Dying.
Yeah.
20 individual inspiring stories. And I have to tell you, number one, I was in tears on some of those stories because they were so touching. She also talks about near-death experiences, those stories that are in there, and it is absolutely amazing, you know, talking about flowers that play music and, you know, beautiful lights and no judgment and learning why we existed on Earth. It's just absolutely amazing.
Oh, absolutely, Anna. You know, let's not forget our guests that are in the Pal Talk Virtual Auditorium. You know, my lips are sticking together today. In the Pal Talk Virtue Auditorium, and let's say hello everybody that's in our auditorium today. Welcome, and nice to see everybody, and thank you for coming and join us. And can you give that information out on how to join us in our chat room, Angela?
Well, absolutely. Just go to paltalk.com, select Social Issues category,
mm-hmm.
Other,
mm-hmm.
and then on to the Paranormal Radio Network room.
Thank you very much on it.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know what? It seems like I'm kind of speechless as far as, you know, really isn't any events coming up.
There is lots of events. In fact, if you go to the portaltalkradio.com site and click on events, you'll see many of our guests and non-guest events and seminars that are happening. So a lot of events that are listed on the Portal Talk Radio site. Also, just to let you know that Portal is now mobile, and that's through UpSnap. So if you wish to download the shows, any of the shows on the Paranormal Radio Network, simply dial 704-631-4060. Again, 704-631-4060. And enter the station ID code 2899 for your free download.
Now, Angela, are you reading that off of a cue card, or have you memorized all that?
No, it's improv.
Wow.
With the exception of the phone number. You know, I don't have that memorized.
Pretty dang good. That's pretty good. You did pretty good there on it. I'm thinking, as we age, do we lose that memory on this stuff? You know, I mean, I know, and I have to go look it up sometimes.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, I believe UpSnap is an outstanding company, not only for offering to the Portal listeners a free download, because normally they do charge.
They do charge,
many people. So that station code of 2899 is vitally important. Otherwise, it is $1.99 per month.
That's true. And thanks to Joe Montalto, our station manager and owner of the UPRN network, for hooking us up with that. And much appreciated out there, Joe.
Right, right. UPRN 105.1 New Orleans.
Absolutely, Onnit. Well, thank you very much for that, Onnit. You know, I wasn't going to do this, but just to let those fans know of the late psychic ghost hunter Peter James, you know that we've had him on the show and his family on the show after his passing, that his book was now released, we at one point thought that we were going to cover the information and the opening of the book, but it looks like the plans changed for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted more information on it, you can search Amazon.com for the book and buy it there. I'm assuming that's probably where they're posting it. Due to conflict of interest between me and the Peter James family, that unfortunately we're separating ways of some things. So,
well, that is rather unfortunate, Tuesday, but, you know, let's keep in mind what a phenomenal psychic Peter James was, and the incredible, you know, influence that he had not only on paranormal investigative teams, but psychics themselves that
Absolutely.
Looked at him to say, wow, I would like to learn from you, and many did. You know, we had the opportunity to see Peter James on television, on film. I know the Queen Mary at one time ran many films of Peter James while he was still living, about his wonderful tours of the Queen Mary. So we have great memories of Peter James, and we also have great memories of having him as our first guest on the Portal Show.
Yes, we
did. Which was fantastic.
Yes, it was, and it was his last interview. Unfortunately, it was his last interview that he did with anybody. He did with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and I miss him and all that good stuff. Still wish the family well and all that stuff. And so, on it. But I thought I would still put it out there and let people know.
Well, I think
that's
very nice of you. Just Amazon.com and just type up Peter James' name, and you can get more information.
Yep.
And you know, Tuesday, I know that there are many people out there that are wanting to put together, you know, their own on Peter, as well as doing their own films on Peter. So I'm sure that there's going to be many, many people, you know, that bring out information about Peter James.
Oh, sure, sure. I was just sent the manuscript for his ghost, whether they're going to do a series out of it or just a one-time deal. So at least that's in the process of it. Isn't
well,
it?
Sure,
to
sure.
Honoring the person who deserves it to be honored, absolutely.
Well, you know, maybe day while you're still living, somebody will do a movie about you.
Oh, I hope not.
Experiences.
Oh, my gosh. That would be a never-ending movie. That
so
would be
the only
sure.
thing you could do Chris or portraying yourself
oh,
on the
Oh, my
movie.
Gosh. I could just see that now. That would Holy smoke, Angela. That would I don't know what kind of rating they would make that in.
Oh, now, come on.
Okay. Well, you know that it wouldn't go X, that's for darn sure. Oh, boy, I'm not on that. But, it, you know, I have to say, though, Angela, and even though with everybody with the ups and downs we all have, we still consider ourselves blessed. And so on that note, we're going to go ahead and go take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Vernon Nepi is going to be joining us. And stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. And welcome back to Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
And Angela, why don't you bring our guest on tonight?
Well, tonight's guest is Dr. Vernon Nepi and Ron, one of the research psychics that belong to Dr. Nepi's group. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Angela. It's a pleasure being back on your show.
Well, back by popular demand, actually, Dr. Nepi. We have many of our listeners, many, many of our listeners, who have requested you over and over again for you to return.
Well,
so
I'm pleased
that's
to
great.
Hear it. I hope I won't disappoint them.
Oh, and you never have. You've always impressed all of us with your work. And I have to say, with this new study that you have out, it's quite impressive, and I had a chance to read majority of it, and I have to say it's just it's a lot of amazing information. Can you tell us a little bit about the project?
Yes, basically, there's a problem when one studies what I like to call subjective paranormal experiences. In other words, what common gardenly we call psychic experiences, but I take away the prejudices here. I say they are subjective, and for the individual they are paranormal, and they might well prove as such. Now, the problem that we have is very simple. If you have an ordinary contemporaneous experience, in other words, an experience that is happening at this moment, I pick up an impression about an event maybe 2,000 miles away and might be absolutely accurate. The problem is the news media get hold of it as well, and it's very difficult to prove that that indeed was some kind of telepathic or clairvoyant experience. So consequently, one aspect that is rather interesting is looking at so-called precognition, which is foreknowledge, knowledge of the future, where people make predictions based on their intuitive awarenesses or psychic knowledge of something. They record it. We discuss it in a group, and very often this group interchanges and others latch onto other impressions. And then if that event happens, one has data by which one can say this was said before. And one aspect that is very relevant, of course, is the event has to occur far more frequently than logic. In other words, if something's logical, it's very nice the event happening, but it doesn't mean to say that the event has any real quality, because by chance it could have occurred. So one has to look at the statistical probability of such events, and that's not easy. So that essentially is what this is all about, and we have formed a hand-selected team who give closed predictions. In other words, it's not available to the public because we don't want to distort information, and sometimes some of these predictions may have some fear components, and we look at these predictions. Incidentally, if we do find that we think that we may be able to avert something or stop something, we post it publicly so that in that kind of way there is some kind of awareness that if there is such a thing as being able to avert a precognition which may come true, we at least try to do that, which we believe is the appropriate moral action.
So, Dr. Nepi, let me ask you, talking about that, posting a prediction, do you feel that the masses out there would pay attention to it because it would be considered, you know, a psychic thing or a psi thing or, you know, paranormal? Do you think they would take that seriously?
Some people do, some people do not. The problem is, it's very, very difficult, this area of precognition, this area of foreknowledge. It's not easy at all. And the reason why it's not easy is it's literally like driving down a road and seeing an intersection with several different options, and if one takes option A, maybe that precognition would happen. But I personally think that at all times, mankind has free will and has the option to go route B or C. Mm-hmm. So I often say to my group, if you bat 300 as you do in baseball, you're batting exceedingly well. So now, in relation to will the public believe this or not believe this, I don't think belief is what is relevant. We're looking at scientific facts. But in addition, will the public be able to appreciate when a prediction goes wrong that in fact the person having the subjective paranormal experience, the subjective paranormal experience, in other words, or the psychic, if you want, or the paragnost, was actually picking up something genuine. It's just, it turned off down the road. And certainly there are those who look at these predictions and say, wow. But one shouldn't become too invested in them, because many of them do turn down the road and turn out wrong as a consequence.
Right. Exactly. Well, there's no way to predict a timeline on the precognitive information in a way sense, that they could be seeing this in a fact that where it's future or whether it's tomorrow. You know, it's hard to predict a timeline when the exact time, unless they're specifically given that during.
Right. And you're very correct in that regard. People sometimes pick up impressions, and they know this impression would happen, but when will it happen, and sometimes where will it happen, and to whom will it happen? Well, this is so nonspecific. From a scientific point of view, one cannot quantify it, because somewhere in the world at some time something is going to happen. And therefore, we try to put some kind of quantification on it. Time, territory, place, for example, which stands, incidentally, the T of the tickles system. The tickles, which we will be discussing, time and territory, and the P, instead of tickles being pickles, the person. But all the same, timelines are very different. It's almost like it's not happening in our particular three-dimensional space, one point in time reality. And that one point in time reality, we're extending forward anyway, so it cannot be happening at that kind of level. It's happening as an extension, as an extension of, on, as an extension of the contemporary onto the precognitive, onto the foreknowledge. Sometimes immediate, an hour or two later, maybe even seconds later, sometimes very prolonged. But what's interesting just in relation to timeline is you're 100% right.
Okay.
Very difficult to pick up. But at times when people pick up impressions, when they rarely go to it, they've now got this impression, they put in their tickles prediction in terms of using different categories to try to quantify it. They come to time and they say, well, you know, I get the impression it's soon, maybe in the next week or so. And suddenly we start having quantitative data.
Well, very good. Now, speaking of quantitative data, you listed 26 different levels that you can describe things or define things. Can we talk about your tickles method? And Ron, I will be going back and forth with you and Tuesday as well to get your intake, because Ron is a member of Dr. Nepi's hand-selected team and has experience utilizing the Seattle method. So, Dr. Nepi, beginning with you, can we break down tickles? What does the T stand for?
Okay, let's put it right at the beginning.
Okay.
When we talk about the word Seattle, it's interesting because I come from Seattle, but in longhand it stands for subjective experience of anomalous trait typology levels evaluation. Now, if you think that's a mouthful, it certainly is, and certainly it is somewhat contrived to fit that word Seattle. Some of them fit in very nicely, subjective experience, and then we're talking about an anomalous component. But trait typology and levels evaluation is a little difficult. So I'm putting this into perspective because when I started off talking or writing about Seattle, there were 10 dimensions, and gradually I expanded. And eventually I realized that it was logical going from A to Z. And the challenge was making A the most important or the most basic, and then going to B and C, etc. So A is the anomaly, the kind of experience. For example, here we're talking about precognition. You might say, well, this was a regular precognitive dream. And it goes all the way down. Now, by the time you get to H, which is, stands for heuristic, which is an esoteric term. It means building blocks. We have the tickles or pickles method, and this is the major one that one can apply when we talk about precognition or foreknowledge. So what does that stand for? We've already talked about the T. The T is for time, and it's also relating to the territory. In other words, the place.
There you go, Rob, and speak up.
Could be pickles, the person involved. So that's the T. The I relates to the actual intention in relation to this. So, for example, did one just spontaneously pick this up, or was there some kind of intention component where, in fact, there it was deliberate and intentional? For example, the person went remote viewing and picked up some impression.
Mm-hmm.
The C.
So would that include meditation as well?
Yes, that would include meditation as well, if it is deliberate meditation, and particularly if it is meditation with the intention of picking up impressions. If one's just meditating and one picks up impressions, one can argue that the intentionality was not meditation itself. The intention was just to alter one's state of consciousness a little, and suddenly everything followed. So there are areas in between, and we have all sorts of abbreviations pertaining to dreams and waking realities and lucid dreams and remote viewing as examples, and meditation would certainly be logical under those circumstances. So that's the impression, and combining with the intentionality. So we've done the T-I of the tickles.
Hmm.
The C is extremely important, and this is the certainty, or what I call from Kabbalah, the Chochmah score. In other words, the knowledge, the absolute awareness, the intuitive impression, the certainty. Some people say, it was so strong I have a knowing, as opposed to they have an impression that something will happen. And this, from a scientific point of view, is absolutely, extremely important. And the reason why it's so important is simply this. If people have a string of predictions, you would imagine that those that they felt had, they had an absolute knowledge on it, they had an absolute certainty about it, may overall turn out more accurate than...
Go ahead. And
so we have, in a way, a certain control even within this very structured team. The K of the tickles, because we've done T-I-C, time and territory and person, because it could be pickles, the I, the impression and the intentionality, the C, the Chochmah or certainty score, the K is what we could call the time component. Now, we've mentioned precognition, going forward in time, but you could go backwards in time. That's called retrocognition, or it could be contemporary, happening at this moment, which would be contemporaneous phenomena.
Okay, so let's bring Ron in, too, on it, so that way we get a little bit of him on it, because he doesn't have too much more time left on it. We could. I want to hear everything I have to say, but can we just quickly ask Ron real quick? Ron, can you just explain to us what your part was that you played in this was Dr. Nebbi's study?
Oh, well, I happen to be a natural...
Ron, would you please speak up, please?
...precognitive person, and, just reposting some of my opinions on a public list. Dr. Nebbi introduced himself, and that's how it all began. It was just by invitation. I guess he saw that I was getting more precognitive data than usual. I guess you saw some sort of ability there, and that's how we all started.
Well, Ron, let me ask you something. Dr. Nebbi talked about the I intentions and the tickle method, and one of the things that he mentioned was the intention of using meditation or any type of ritual to gain that information, that premonition. Do you think that intention might skew one's perception or enhance it?
That's an interesting question. I think it can enhance it, and on the other hand, it can skew it. I think it all depends on your own strength as a psychic, if one needs that strength. For me, I think a lot of the data, my precognitive data that I get, is dream visual.
Mm-hmm.
And those are more often than not spontaneous.
So you have more spontaneous information coming to you than rather approaching it a meditative way.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to also say that even though it's spontaneous in a subconscious way, it's you can say it's intentional. Just that you know, in your everyday waking or sleeping, you're just not quite aware of it because your brain and your mind is all working 24/7. So it's just a matter of tuning into that. So there is intentionality on the subconscious side, and that's kind of visuals and those impressions that Vernon was saying with contemporaneous impressions. So, like, you know, if you see the time on the clock, you see repeating coincidences, electrical disturbances, things like that. You know, those are all very, very strong impressions, and I have to link that, those impressions with the dream visuals, tie it in, because most times data filters down over several days. You just don't get it all in one bunch. So data can filter in over a few days. It can filter in over a week, 10 days, even longer, even years.
Wow.
It depends on how clued in you are into the system. Yeah.
Tuesday? Well,
yep.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about, now you talk about time on a clock and things of this nature. So are you saying that there's actual outside influences other than being a psychic that would allow you to get information from it?
Well, yeah, these are tools. These are all tools that are disposal at whatever your subconscious mind goes into. If you get that big impression with the time, and by experience, usually your subconscious will clue into a particular time, and that time actually becomes a metaphor. You know, it's a contemporaneous metaphor, same as a visual metaphor. They're all metaphors, as far as I'm concerned, and it's just understanding what all of these you know, contemporaneous visual and visual cues mean.
Dr. Nepi, I'd like to ask you about the intentions part. One other thing, do you think, has there ever been a difference in the information you've received from a premonition, a difference between a spontaneous information or induced psi information?
Yes and no. Let us say, I think the difference is sometimes the difference between directed and spontaneous information. In other words, people pick up impressions, but they just happen. Very often, spontaneously, they don't predict that it's going to happen. Suddenly, it happens, and they report that sudden spontaneous impression. But it can be about anything, and so they can hone in and make a prediction. Now, if something is induced, if they are targeting a particular target, a particular aspect of prediction, this is much, much more difficult. And therefore, the spontaneous might be actually very often a higher level of knowing than the induced happening. However, when one looks at it in another way, when people become really skilled, as in studies pertaining to remote viewing, where some of the data is very, very good indeed. This is deliberate and intentional in terms of the direction that patients or people, individuals, clients, psychics, anyone has gone. And they will go along and they will pick up impressions. The only difference here is sometimes the impressions, as Ron points out, have certain metaphoric components. And Ronnie is very good at picking out, wait a minute, this metaphor seems to imply X. And the next time round that metaphor comes, which is purely his own kind of metaphorical experience that bears no relationship to anyone else, but the next time it comes, he knows what it means. So that is certainly the difference in terms of intentionality compared with spontaneous. But I think the major one is whether or not it's focused compared with just picking up spontaneous experiences.
Has there been a way, Dr. Neppy, for the left side and the right side of the brain where this information comes from? Is there one side of the brain that this, that maybe is more active or is shown more and some sort of test that they're hooked up to when they're having this type of precogged information?
You know, it's a really good question, and I wish I could tell you, yes, it's the non-dominant hemisphere, the right side of the brain, the minor hemisphere. This is the creative one. But the fact is, we have two sides to our brain, and we have two sides to our brain for a purpose and a reason. And I suspect that both sides of the brain are involved, and in some of our data, we've actually found that the dominant hemisphere sometimes is involved. Sometimes it's the non-dominant, sometimes it's both. I think it depends on the particular event that is happening and the circumstance under which those events are happening. Those are the determining factors in terms of which hemispheres are involved and how much. Maybe creativity is certainly part of that, what we broadly perceive as the synthetic non-dominant hemisphere, seeing the whole. But one also has to see the little parts, the analytic component, and that is the dominant hemisphere or major hemisphere.
Can the mind choose the hallucination it wants to? For instance, if it, the fact is, and determining whether or not this is actual a hallucination, is the hallucination part of it coming from the dominant part of the brain when this does occur? And can the mind choose the type of hallucination, in fact, if indeed this is determined it was, that what the person perceives? And Dr. Neppy, we've only got 2 minutes, and we've actually got to go to break on it. And so, Angela, did you want to ask, you know, hold that note, Dr. Neppy. Did you want to ask Ron more questions on it?
Ron, I just want to ask you if you could share any prediction that has come about that you utilized the Seattle Tickle Method with.
Not a tough one, but there's so many predictions that I've made. For one, I guess the most classic one, and this is actually pre-tickles, before actually tickles came into play. But I basically use the same metaphoric language and whatnot. That would be the 2003 Jakarta bombing Indonesia. I think believe it was the Marriott Hotel. And I had a repeating metaphor, and interestingly enough, I would see this license plate in my visuals, and it was JUN-JUL, and when I first recognized that metaphor, it had to do with the Bali bombing, where all the Australians were killed. So I remembered that metaphor, and it came up again in visuals prior to the 2003 Jakarta bombing. And I posted it all to Dr. Neppy, and along with a lot of other data associated with it. And I was there, and I believe I posted it several hours before the event.
Absolutely amazing.
So, yeah. Actually, we have a minute left.
Well, Ron, we certainly do appreciate you participating with us tonight. With Dr. Neppy, I know that you're an important part of his group, and I have actually seen some of your premonitions and work, and I have to say, outstanding.
Thank you very much.
So I hope that you will join us for another show, Ron, and we look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you.
We're going to go to break. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
Welcome back to Portal Paranormal Talk.
And welcome back to Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
And tonight joining us is Dr. Vernon Neppy. And we have one of the students, I believe. Do we call you a student, McChrystal?
Yes.
Okay, let's call you a student. We have a student that is joining us that was part of Dr. Neppy's study, and you want to be known as McChrystal. And how are
That's
you?
Right.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure.
And Dr. Nappy, are you still there, too?
I am indeed, and I can tell you that McChrystal is far more than a student. I'm the student. I'm learning from all these wonderful people that work with me. They are the doers. They are the people who are picking up the information, and I only have great admiration for them.
Well, you know, I have to actually also, too, give you credit, Dr. Nappy, because it's not all doctors, and especially with your statue and what doctrines you have, because it is absolutely fabulous. And what you, for our listening audience, there is an endless list of Dr. Nappy's education and his intelligence, but to be open-minded about this. Because most doctors, I would say, don't go into these type of fields and actually perform these types of studies. And so I truly believe the fact is that you're adding so much more to, you know, our community in regard to that, because I have to say it's very hard to be taken seriously.
Well, you know, I think it's very important to be not only open-minded, but aware that we don't know everything in our world. If we don't know everything in our world, at least we can try to learn a little bit more. And unfortunately or fortunately, what happens is all too often experiences that are genuine and completely within normal limits are interpreted as abnormal. And in fact, earlier in the show, the word hallucination came up. Now, hallucinations are okay if you can understand that they are normal or abnormal hallucinations, but I don't like to use the term because it's almost prejudicial. Sometimes people misinterpret these as the person is experiencing experiences which are beyond what their usual senses have been able to transmit to them, and they think that this is crazy when it's indeed not crazy. It may well be reflecting the very well-validated and very justified areas pertaining to what we're calling extrasensory perception.
Well, and I agree with you there, because it is, to me, very, very easy for that to have an excuse of from others, you know, who maybe don't have their belief system or open-minded about this, that indeed the person is perceiving a hallucination and needs to have some kind of psychiatry help, and therefore on it. And so have psychiatrists, are they more relaxed these days, Dr. Nappy, instead of jumping to conclusions that the patient must be hallucinating when they have the past described experiences, something of the paranormal? Are we finding more that they are more relaxed and able to, like yourself, be open-minded in regard to this?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think there is a little bit of a change when you talk to some of my colleagues on a one-to-one basis. But one certainly finds that, fortunately or unfortunately, not many have been adequately trained in this area. So it's not a case of being more relaxed talking about this. Their whole basis, their whole way of thinking is very limited because they're not aware of the data that is outside what they should be aware of.
Angela? Well, McChrystal, I would like to ask about your precognition abilities and how you approach things utilizing the Seattle Tickles method.
Well, I have a bit of a problem with the Seattle Tickles method. I'll get it down. I find that if I'm picking up a premonition, if I'm getting a vision or a knowing, and I start worrying about the time and the impression and the kind and the certainty and all of that, then I tend to get myself a little befuddled.
Mm-hmm.
There's another problem that I think all psychics have, and that is separating the vision from imagination.
Exactly.
And what I find helps me an awful lot is just write down my vision, and then go through with modifiers, which are also part of Dr. Nappy's Seattle Tickles method. And these modifiers are D for definite, F was speculative. Now, that's an extremely important thing. I just put a little D behind a certain part of my story. For example, a recent vision I had was of a pair of trout, the feet and lower legs of somebody sticking out from around a couch or a chair, a covered chair on the floor, and they were in trousers and brown shoes and that sort of thing. And if I were to describe it, it would be a man lying on the floor and lots of blood. Well, the actual vision was just of the shoes. So was it a man or was it a woman? Okay, so it was just vision of shoes and lower legs of clothed in trousers, and that's a definite. Probably a man, speculative. Lots of blood, knowing. And then a flash of a head with a gun blowing off the right side of the head.
Oh, goodness
gracious!
What a vision!
Kind of an exciting, vision. I have some thoughts of it, but I can't say it was a suicide that I saw because I didn't see whether or not the person's hand. It was the person who was shooting himself, or that sort of thing. So you use these things such as D for definite, F for speculative, F for fact, which it was a fact was on the floor, and
oh, so you break it down into categories as far as
right, okay. and
very
and,
well done, Dr.
As you tell the story, see, sometimes you get a story that gets a little bit too. In trying to make it all sound correct.
Okay.
So how do you differentiate between it being retrocognitive, like going in the past, or precognitive, that coming in the future?
You know what? I just don't. I don't.
Okay, you say you can't gain control.
I don't tend to get things. Generally, when I'm looking at something that's retrocognitive or contemporaneous. For example, I do quite a bit of profiling.
Okay.
I'm in my business. Many times I'm called into meetings to sit there and say, okay, this fellow is lying. This fellow doesn't have the money he claims to have. This guy wants to scuttle the whole thing and go home. That sort of bit. I've been doing that quite successfully for quite a number of years. So
Dr. Nebri, when McChrystal talks about descriptions, like, you know, F being fact or M being metaphor, or S being speculative or D being a definite impression, does that apply to all types of precognition, like lucid dreaming or being wide awake?
Yes, it can apply to anything, because one is really just saying, listen, these are the components of my knowing, of my awareness, of my experience, and some are clearer than others, some components. Some of it, I get the impression of X, but X doesn't quite fit. I don't know where it fits in. So I'm speculating that this is what it means. You know, people will talk about a coffin or something black or whatever, and they might speculate that the coffin might imply some kind of death. But that's a speculation as opposed to a definite impression. These are very, very useful modifiers because they can enhance not only the quality of the experience, but one can look at it and say, well, these were the ones that involved complete awareness, complete knowings that this was going to be what was going to happen, and it was described in a very definite way, and this was metaphoric. And gradually I've learned that this implies the metaphor for X, but it might also imply the metaphor for Y. So it lowers down the statistic, but overall it gives a whole perspective. And the crystal has pointed out something else.
Right.
She said, well, sometimes the tickles gets in the way. The object of the exercise is not necessarily getting in the way. The object of the exercise is one still picks up on spontaneous impression. After one's picked up on spontaneous impression, one goes along and one classifies it. And in terms of the classification, we have the time and the territory and the person and the intention and the impression that the person has and the direction in terms of time and the degree of certainty that the person has. And we've covered these in terms of the tick. At the L level, we have the logic. So you have logic based on data available, and it's very nice saying there's going to be a car accident in St. Louis tomorrow. Well, logically, obviously, there's going to be a car accident.
Okay.
So that one's got to look at the statistical guesstimate of how common this kind of phenomenon is. The Pope is being elected. What are the pundits saying? Who's going to win the Super Bowl right early on? And if one picks up some team that is expected to, well, so what? But if one is able to predict something that is completely out of the ordinary, and you start combining this in a meta-analysis, you start getting a better impression. So that's the L of the tickles, and just to complete it, E is an interesting one because it stands for emotional reaction. And people will often say, you know, I got this very strong emotion, I felt very sad or very happy or I was distressed or whatever. And this is also something, because one can fit it into its appropriateness or inappropriateness as well. And then finally we have the S, which is the bodily kind of experience, or the somatic experience. And this is sometimes unexplained. I had somebody who would always have an itchy left foot when an event that was bad was happening to her family. And one day she was at the theater, and she got this intense itchy left foot. And in fact, at intermission, they announced from the front, would she proceed home immediately? Her daughter had been assaulted.
So
this kind of component is the somatic or bodily component. But on the other hand, it would also fit very often for some people the metaphor. So you can see where these extra modifiers fit in.
So each person, would you say, Dr. Nepi, is each person's vision or each person's perception is symbolic to them, that the symbology with the visions that they are getting is in a personal effect, that not everybody or all who does this gets the same symbols in each precogged vision.
Exactly. And even more difficult is, how do you interpret a reality that only you're experiencing? Nobody else is there to validate it. And in our group, sometimes there is this validation because one person will say something and another will say something, or else I might at times say, please predict relating to event X, and I'll collect together the data so nobody else will sort of have a distortion of what the others are picking up.
Okay.
But effectively, it's very, very difficult because there always is a psychological component.
Mm.
And sometimes it's hard to differentiate how much of this is psychological. The person says, you know, I'm just not feeling good today. I don't know what it is, but I'm not feeling good. Well, is this something that they're picking up?
Right.
Is this something psychic that's being picked up? Is it something in the air? Are they picking up a little bit of flu or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes very, very difficult differentiating it.
Well, McChrystal, let me ask you a question. Going back to the L of tickles, which stands for logic, okay, do you believe that your own experience with utilizing logic plays an important role, or do you think that maybe one should try not to bring logic into it, as not to skew any of the information that you are getting psychically?
It's a double-edged sword. Often you a lot of people will come up with predictions such as, well, the cow flew into the room, and then Robin Hood came in, and you know, there's nothing logical about it, and they draw conclusions based on things that really couldn't be happening, and so you have to weigh what is possible versus what is not possible. I did made a projection some time ago about Ken Lay. I said that he would not be convicted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was found guilty, but he died before he was convicted. When he was found guilty, I just was jumping up and down as mad as can be, because I was sure I was right.
Right.
And it took a couple of months and his dying to prove out the fact that what I had seen was actually logical. So it's a double-edged sword. That sometimes what appears to be logical is not logical at all, and something that that seems kind of foolish and completely off base can turn out to be the real story. So.
Mm. Dr. Nepi, I want to turn now to the medical portion of things. And do you believe if one is diagnosed with the temporal lobe epilepsy and experiences, let's say, parapsychological phenomenon, does that information that they receive because they have epilepsy lack consideration by a researcher such as yourself?
Well, it's a several-fold question. First of all, you use the word, do I believe? It doesn't matter what I believe. Let's
right.
say, do I regard the evidence as cogent, or scientifically, is there some kind of base to make a conclusion? So let's leave out that word believe. I know that you meant it in that sense, but I just want to emphasize that we're not talking about I believe in this or I believe in that.
Right.
One is talking about legitimate scientific fact. Second point, you mentioned temporal lobe epilepsy. This is something that you're referring to based on some of my work that began in the late 1970s, demonstrating that there is an area of the brain that is involved with psychic experiences. Now, the skeptic would say, ah, that proves that the psychic experiences come from the brain and they're nothing else. The alternative explanation is that these experiences have to be modulated through the brain in order for us to know what is going on. So there has to be an area of the brain involved. Now, you rightly mentioned the temporal lobe of the brain, because the temporal lobe of the brain is the great integrator of the brain. It integrates all sorts of polymodal perceptual input. In other words, it integrates things that one's seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and sensing and other aspects that one's associated, and it all comes through and is integrated beautifully by the temporal lobe of the brain. Now, you mentioned then temporal lobe epilepsy. Let me just say that there is a subpopulation of people who have seizure disorders where the firing occurs from the temporal lobe of the brain. And it so happens that because of this integration component, they might have disintegration with the firing, which is not very nice. But on the other hand, some of these people have subjective paranormal experiences to a far greater degree, as it's reported, than the general population. Now, this is very important to bear in mind, because the reverse also applies, but that doesn't make people who are psychic or have subjective paranormal experiences having temporal lobe epilepsy. But their experiences might be integrated through the temporal lobe of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a brief answer to the medical side of your question. There's a link between the two. We're not talking belief. We're talking scientific data based on real statistical and phenomenological analyses. The temporal lobe is logical. Patients with temporal lobe epilepsy might be lucky or unlucky enough to have also subjective paranormal experiences depending on their particular firing or differences in brain function. On the other hand, people who have a lot of psychic experiences might have an opening in their brain. I called it a window into the mind, which might relate to the temporal lobe.
Oh, I can understand. I have probably have an opening in my mind on that one, Dr. Happy, on it. That's for sure on it. You know, let's say goodbye to Crystal, because we did say that we would keep her on until the bottom of the half of the hour on it. Crystal, thank you so much for joining us tonight on it and sharing with us your information. I should call you McCrystal on it. I forgot the MC. I apologize
not
for
a
that
problem.
On it. And please come back and join us again on the show, and we can talk with you a little bit longer.
Okay.
Thank you very much, McCrystal.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Dr. Nappy, you know, there has been many studies in regarding epilepsy and poltergeist activity in a scientific way on this, and I'll have to send you the information that I have on this, that they have found leaps and bounds of a connection between the two.
Yes. First of all, again, let's use good scientific terminology.
Okay.
You know, if you use a word like poltergeist, or you use a word like ghost, or apparition. Well, that sounds okay to those in the field who know that you're not being prejudicial. For those of us in science, we use all sorts of special terms. So in relation to poltergeist activity, it's one kind of RSPK,
correct,
a recurrent,
right,
spontaneous psychokinetic phenomenon. And that sounds very impressive. Probably for you, no more impressive than poltergeist, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
But again, just a clarification. Now, indeed, yes, there have been studies relating to RSPK, or recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. Not too many, but a little bit. For example, Professor Bill Roll has been involved with this. But looking in terms of brain function. Now, here is something that is interesting, and I have just hypothesized this in a paper, that when this is motor, in other words, involves muscles or activity, you need the executive part of the brain, the part of the brain that is involved with those activities, or you need some component of that executive. And therefore, we might be seeing more frontal lobe component than temporal lobe component. And it may be that those people who have frontal lobe seizures or frontal lobe dysfunction or unusual or anomalous functions of their frontal lobe may be more likely to be in some kind of way involved with this absolutely bizarre phenomenon that is very difficult to prove. Because, by definition, we've spoken about recurrent spontaneous. If it's spontaneous, you've got to wait sometimes a long time, and it just happens recurrently. But this might have a link with the frontal lobe, as well as maybe with the motor sides of the temporal lobe.
Absolutely amazing, Dr. Nappy. Dr. Nappy, I want to talk about the Seattle Tickles method that you've created, and apply that to those researchers today. I know there's a lot of different types of models that are being used and different types of tests to determine if that psi information is showing evidence. How can researchers as well as individuals utilize Seattle with other tests that are being done in a controlled environment?
Very good question. What you've spoken about effectively are two components of the same question. The one is, obviously there is experimentation and doing research under experimental or controlled conditions. And frankly, such research is very good because you can statistically quantitate it and work out where this all fits. The problem with such research is because it's not spontaneous and it is structured towards something specific, and the person either has to get it right or get it wrong, under those circumstances, we'd be lucky if we score 51% when 50% is average or mean. So that one needs hundreds upon hundreds of runs in order to generate statistics, as opposed to spontaneous phenomena where the person doesn't know why they're picking up that impression, where you need much, much less in relation to this. So this is one very important component, the differentiation of the spontaneous versus the experimental. Now let's imagine that you are Jill Smith at home, and you have subjective paranormal experiences. Now, how do you quantitate it? Well, one way is to, as soon as it happens, either write it down or use some kind of recording device. These are very cheap now, and one can use a digital recorder, and then one records it. Now, it doesn't help if you record this thing or you write it down and you don't show it to anyone, because under those circumstances, when it happens the next day, nobody believes you.
Right,
you don't
right.
tell anyone. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you just made it up after it happened. So there has to be some kind of external validation. We use
the
what we call premonition
bankers.
In other words, I would send this out, these predictions, to many different people spread around the world. They wouldn't even know who was on the team of bankers, because otherwise they could be accused of collaborating or in some kind of way being in cahoots, which indeed they were not. But I wanted to prevent this. Now, I am lucky enough to have available a technique that is so good in terms of secure email, it's called Zmail, that no longer do we need to use premonitions bankers. If people send stuff by Zmail, it is time stamped. We know exactly where it's come from. So there is no way that in any way people could modify that prediction. And this is the value of Zmail, and it's becoming more and more useful in terms of research of this kind. Now, there's another component. Incidentally, if you want to go on Zmail, you can go to onezmail.com.
Okay, and the letter Z.
But the now, there's another component. Here, Jill Smith has her prediction. How do we predict this? How do we know what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would advise Jill Smith also to use a technique such as tickles. In other words, after Jill Smith has had all these impressions, write it down. Write T. T for timing. When's this going to happen? And sometimes Jill doesn't know exactly when it's going to happen. And sometimes something flashes into her head tomorrow. So she writes in 24 hours' time, or window 24 to 48 hours. The territory, where? The person, the people involved. That's the T and the P of the tickles pickles. And then at the next level, she can say, this was, I suspect it is a precognitive impression. What kind of impression? It happened spontaneously. It was, in terms of intention, a spontaneous intention. The chokhmah or certainty score, it felt very, very strong, so much so it was like a knowing. And then, here we're describing precognition, but very often it's contemporary. And that's okay, as long as you mention it and you don't know the information. Then you have to look at the L, the logic. And are there any emotional or E components or any somatic or bodily components? And then, of course, there's what McChrystal was talking about, these various modifiers. Is this metaphoric? Are there certain speculative elements? Because you can divide up each one of them. Is there something that one could actually record from a definite point of view that this definitely is occurring? What are the facts that are known in this regard? And so anyone can do this, and they can create their own lab, but they have to have people recording this.
So,
but
Dr. Nebbe, is the Seattle method available
publicly
for the masses to view?
Pardon?
Is your Seattle's paper available for the masses to view? Are they publicly available?
You know,
so that they could learn
question.
From you?
It's written as a chapter for a book, which will probably come out next year. And I have a hope of being able to put this on my website. So write down my website, PNI.org, Pacific Neuropsychiatric Institute.org, PeterNancyIvan.org, and just go to /ESP, and you'll be on all sorts of tours in relation to ESP. And if you're interested in looking at my books, just a word, you can go to brainvoyage.com, and you'll find several of my books, including, for example, a whole deja vu series there, and my wonderful book, Cry the Beloved Mind, The Voyage of Hope. So, yes, if it's not on the website at the moment, I'm hoping it will get onto the website soon. I have to get the requisite permissions if necessary.
Do we have another book we can look forward to, Dr. Nepisu?
Oh, yes. Several, in fact. I am hoping to write... The next one I'm hoping to do is a play, because I'm a playwright as well.
No kidding.
And this, I will not give away the secret, but this play has a lot to do with the paranormal and is very exciting.
How wonderful. Well, Dr. Nesmi, we know that you have other obligations to fulfill tonight, and so we won't keep you any longer on the show on it. And so on your final word for this.
Yes, there are some final words, and that is, do bear in mind, first of all, that if you have these experiences, some perceive them as blessings, some perceive them as curses because they don't want them to happen. And you can probably block them out. If you're experiencing them as curses, maybe there might be other kinds of symptoms that you have, and maybe you fit within that temporal lobe framework, and it might be useful speaking to your doctor and potentially, if necessary, having treatment for that. If it's
okay.
A blessing, regard it as a blessing, but remember, don't govern your life by it. The reason why I say that, in terms of not governing one's life by it, is most of it is going to be wrong. Remember the baseball player who makes a fortune because he bats 300. If you see 10 worries coming down the road towards you, you can be sure 9 would have turned off before they reach you. In the same kind of way here, there are many different curves. We were talking during the break about a whole amount of skittles and how, to a large degree, each one becomes a little point. And sometimes there's a whole concatenation of events, but if you can cut out that one event, that's important. And this is something that's highly relevant, a theory that I have. I've called it the Nepi Law of Cause and Effect. Just very briefly, what this means is... And it's difficult to prove because you've got no control.
Right.
One might pick up an impression. It may be genuinely precognitive. It might be something that is frightening. But bear in mind that that impression can be changed. In other words, you change the cause, you change the effect.
I absolutely agree with that.
That is done. Suddenly, a whole new ball game is there.
Absolutely,
you won't have
that
your
precognition, concrete.
But you might just find that you will improve. But remember, this is a very complex area. It's not something to be frightened by, but it's also something to take in another way rather seriously.
Okay.
And always have available, if you need it, if you are in any way fearful or frightened, appropriate professionals who can help.
Okay.
Well, God bless you, Dr. Nepi, for coming back onto the show. I know our listeners are thrilled with all of the information that you had to share with us tonight. Do come back, please.
I hope to return. It's always fun talking to Tuesday and Angela and to the listening audience in this regard, and I'm pleased that they appreciate what I say.
Oh, well, we absolutely love to have you. And again, you know, I didn't finish my long list of questions. Because we
well, you can ask one or two more.
I have 15 pages
oh, no,
of questions.
As I said, Angela spent... Oh, no, she's got... I got 5 pages of her questions here in my hand here, Dr. Nepi, on it. and then she doesn't allow me to use my own. She gives me all her questions, and I thought, well, where's mine going to fit in on these? There's just never enough time because, you know, there's...
There's the amazing information and the amazing studies that you're doing is making a difference in this world, Dr. Nebbi, and I hope that you know this, that not only for those of us who have gifts, that it's not an easy life to have them and to learn them and to use them in a correct manner, but the fact of it is to have somebody such as yourself in an open mind way to embrace this on it, and it does make a difference for those people here on Earth.
Well, thank you for those kind comments. I appreciate that.
You're welcome on that one. And Angela, we will talk to you soon, Dr. Nebbi. And again, God bless you. Thank you for being on our show.
God bless
you,
Dr. Nebbi. And good night.
Good night.
Well, Tuesday, it was a phenomenal show.
I have to say, you know, I felt, you know, each time that we have Dr. Nebbi on, I'm a little bit more and more relaxed, and I'm able to feel that I can contribute some questions that, you know, that has to do with his work, because, again, you know, it's getting used to his writing, and, you know, sometimes when you're so intelligent and the way that you write, you know, it does take a little bit, again, for myself to get used to that, and I felt that this time I actually could understand more of it. And I have to say, Angela, you know, I'm looking for a Nobel Prize for this man because he has done some amazing work.
Well, you know, absolutely. And I know that you are not only logically coming up with that, but you also are psychically coming up with that, because I, too, can tell you the same information has come to me. But it is an absolutely amazing method, and thank goodness that Dr. Nebbi will be posting that on his website, www.brainvoyage.com, as well as pni.org. And I believe it's important for not only psychics, but also for researchers to be able to access the Seattle method, because I have about 20 pages of that method broken down. So anyone really with an intuition can learn how to show evidence of their experience, and researchers can now utilize that model along with the other tests that they're doing. So he's really provided all, you know, come around full circle, provided psychics as well as researchers the tool that they need to show evidence, and that, my friend, is important.
It really is, and not only that, for the person who is, you know, we'll call them the sitter of the vision, you know, to able to validate that, you know, that sometimes we see these visions, and I have had my share of them, and I have to say that I still don't enjoy them, because I have had a couple of them go full term on the vision, and everything that I saw happened. And fortunately, mine had to do with a couple of airplane crashes, and it's just, you know, seeing the plane going down and the people killed, and it's just not a pleasant thing. But the symbology of it, too, but in understanding that what my part plays in the vision, that am I here for this vision to be shown to stop the vision, and it isn't. It isn't my job to stop the vision, but to better understand sometimes the reason why that I'm receiving it. And that's a process we have to go through on it, though, Angela. But, you know, also, too, I feel that with Dr. Nebbi is that this is something about synchronicity. Is I was researching autism. I have a family member that does have what we call a hint of autism. And, you know, the dreams and hopes and wishes and faith for this terrible condition, I'm not going to call it a disease, but to call it a condition, is to find a cure for it or find the reason for it. And I happened upon finding a scientist that has found some huge, maybe a breakthrough in autism. And so I happened to email Dr. Nebbi and asked him about if he had heard from the scientist, if he had heard about this certain, I think it was Fragile X syndrome on it. And Dr. Nebbi had just met with this man and regarding it. And so, see, and Dr. Nebbi was able to supply me with more information. But the synchronicity about how I even ended up on this site to find this information, to take me back. And here it goes that Dr. Nebbi has already been in contact with him and just met with him.
Synchronicity, for sure.
You know, I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. So he's more than just deja vu, and he's more than just his neuroscientist. He's more than just that. He's also involved with helping other types of finding cures for things.
Certainly, certainly. You know? Well, he is an amazing man, and also you know, our guest psychics tonight, Ron and McCrystal, I've been privileged to be able to see some of their premonitions, and they, you know, utilizing the Seattle method.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you how amazing that these two psychics are, and I'm wanting us to do a show with McCrystal and Ron and a few others that can really now start to bring out some of their premonitions as well as their modifiers and parts of Seattle that play an important role in their premonitions all the way around. So I think that it's important for us to support Psy research and those psychics that are willing to share that information with us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely on that, Angela. And here's the thing, I mean, you know, I myself, you know, and I'm not speaking for anybody else, just myself, just, you know, I am a psychic medium, but, you know, I wasn't just satisfied with just being a psychic medium. I mean, you know, it's like having a tool, and you want to open it up and see how that tool works, you know. And so I myself wanted more information. I didn't want it from a higher source. That's not what I was looking for. I was looking for concrete proof in right here in front of me that I could tear down, pull it apart, put it back together, and know how it works. You know, and same with ghost activity, and same with spirit activity. I wanted to know how they travel, why they're here, everything aspect of it. And so my enjoyment of this, to further my spirituality and my education, my knowledge, is that I myself, you know, document science experiments with it. And it doesn't take a whole lot of stuff with it, but you have to be very dedicated in taking notes, many notes, and to set up your program before you start the documentation in regard to your test or your study on it. And, you know, and I have to say that it's given me a whole heck of a lot of more knowledge in regarding how or why that there are some of us that decide not to move on to the other side in that light form and stay here on it, and understanding how to help them better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, you know, Tuesday, both you and I have, you know, the privilege of having this Seattle method in our hands.
Yes.
And I think that it's very important for us being psychics to be able to utilize that to find and show evidence of our own predictions. And again, I'm hoping that researchers also pick this model up, which I'm pretty much sure, I say pretty much sure, I'm 100% sure.
Yeah.
That they're going to take it and run with it, because it is a phenomenal thing. So, like I said, what a great show. And we thank our listeners for tuning in tonight, and thank you again for requesting Dr. Nepi. He is one of our favorites.
Yes, he is on that. And, you know, we do have we have a couple minutes left, Angela. We've got about 3 minutes left on it. And we have a comment from one of our guests in the virtual auditorium, and her, AJ says, and yet there is still no concrete replica replicable, what does it say on there? Reliable evidence of precognition. Maybe we don't have the exact, actually concrete proof in regarding it.
No, but the Seattle method, this model is showing the evidence. And like Dr. Nepi said, there is now online Z-mail, which a lot of companies and doctors and scientists are now utilizing,
mm-hmm.
because no one will be able to manipulate. In other words, they can't copy and paste. They can't add to, you know, that research or that premonition that's being given. So, you know, corporations with high security information that wish to make it available through email know that it's highly encrypted software that's being used, and at time and date stamps everything. So, but there is evidence of precognition out there, and so Dr. Nepi is presenting the Seattle model so that researchers as well as psychics can utilize that and prove their evidence. And that evidence, by the way, will be published sometime in the very near future.
And I think that's very important too. And that that website is www.zcentry.com. on
mm-hmm.
it, and I plan on using this. I didn't know about this for the future on it. So, Angela, we can wrap it up here on it. Thank you so much for bringing Dr. Nepi, because you were the one that actually booked him on it, and I really enjoyed that on it too. And so, everybody, thank you for listening to Paranormal, for Portal Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas. Yeah. You've been listening to Portal Paranormal Talk Radio on the Paranormal Radio Network, UPRN 105.1 New Orleans.
Yes, and take care of yourself and each other, and God bless. Bye-bye.